You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host. And with me for the second of a two-part interview is my colleague, Bennett Weiner. Bennett is the Chief Operating Officer at the Wise Giving Alliance. And as I mentioned in the first episode, there are few people on the planet who know more about charity accountability than him. So in our first episode, Bennett, we had a chance to dig into some of the important areas around how charities go about soliciting us. And we got a chance to talk about the important ways charities go about messaging so as to make sure that we open our mail to respond to their appeals. In this episode, we're going to talk more about some of the other areas that we should consider when evaluating the trustworthiness of a charity, and also consider some of the important ways charities go about assessing their impact and some of the limitations and challenges associated with that. But let's conclude our first interview by referring back to where we ended that interview, focused more on charity appeals. We were talking about appeal accuracy as an important indicator of the trustworthiness of a charity. But we also like to look at the cost of fundraising. To some extent, you know, the cost of fundraising is an indication of whether a charity is spending too much of the money that they have trying to raise money, but also recognizing that a charity needs to spend money in order to get money to accomplish its mission. And, you know, we have a standard that I want you to talk about that kind of goes into that. And I'd like for you to, if you could, Bennett, distinguish between how we go about helping people determine if charities are spending too much.
So first of all, let me start out the answer by saying that one of the things that, you know, our organization recommends now is that donors shouldn't solely focus on the charity finances when making a giving decision. It's an important consideration, but looking at that and nothing else really doesn't give you a complete picture of their accountability or activities. That being said, we do have a threshold standard in terms of fundraising costs. And that is that we hope that total fundraising costs won't exceed 35% of the total contributions raised by the organizations. And in that circumstance, that ratio is looked at the total fundraising costs for the year, not just an individual campaign, but for the entire year, comparing it to all the contributions raised in that year. And we hope that will be less than 35%, not to exceed that. And we find that of the nationally soliciting charities that we routinely evaluate, there are fewer than 10% of them that are not able to meet that specific standard. So while it gets a lot of attention, we see that the aberrations, fortunately, are not large in volume in terms of the number of organizations that exceed that threshold. But we do point it out when they don't meet that guideline, and the reports that we produce will explain that. But, you know, our standards address broader issues, the 20 BBB standards for charity accountability. And if I could put into simple terms what those 20 standards address, try to give people a better understanding of what our approach is to that full picture of accountability that I just mentioned. So there are really four questions, I would say, that our standards are seeking to answer when we're doing this evaluation in relation to these 20 standards. And they are, number one, Does the charity have adequate oversight by its governing body? In other words, its board of directors. And that's key. You want a board of directors that's engaged and involved and looking over what the charity is doing and making sure that corrections are made and they are checking to whether your organization is on track with accomplishing its goals. The second thing I would say is, does the organization manage their finances in accordance with donor expectations? That's sort of the second question. And that addresses the fundraising issue, as well as how much is spent on programs, as well as the accuracy of the financial statements and their accessibility to those who want to review it. Donors expect certain things that when they make a contribution to charity, and one of those big things is that the majority of what they give is going to be used for the purposes that they were asked to support. And that just makes logical sense, but that is one of the things we're seeking to verify. The third question is, does the charity periodically assess how well it's addressing its mission? And that usually is accomplished by reviewing your accomplishments in relation to your goals and seeing what you've done well and what may need to be improved. Some people may call this an impact statement or a reporting on results. However you refer to it, you're verifying whether you're really on track with your mission and then making an adjustment. And that has to be done periodically because organizations can get off track in different directions and lose sight of the very reason that they were put into existence. And the last question I would say is the organization being transparent and truthful in their communications? And that would encompass things like the accuracy of fundraising appeals, as well as the accessibility of basic facts on the organization's website, among other outreaches the organizations are engaged in. So those issues on board governance, finances, you know, results reporting, and then finally, transparent and truthful communications, those are the four areas, as well as the four questions, as I phrase them, that we're seeking to answer when we do these evaluations.
Yeah, and it's so important because I don't suspect that most people appreciate the depth of the areas in which a charity should be evaluated in order to know it's trustworthy. We, of course, understand how many people simply want to know, well, how much money is the charity spending on administration, or how much money are they spending on fundraising? And they even look to compare organizations based on what those percentages are. And there are certainly drawbacks to doing that, because just because a charity is spending 85 cents out of the dollar on programs and another charity is spending 65 cents out of the dollar on programs doesn't mean that one is better than the other. I mean, you have to look at what they're actually doing with the money that they have. And charities that have different missions may need to have different types of administration. So there are all sorts of reasons why some charities might have different percentages. And to just lock into your mind a certain number and assume that one group is better than another is probably not a good way to base your giving decisions. And you can be very misled, as you and I both know. So I'm glad you pointed out that there are so many other things that have to be considered, because if you just focus on the fundraising percentages or the administrative cost percentages or the overhead percentages, as some people look at them, you might be missing a whole lot. As you said, the governance is so important. I mean, there's so many areas in governance where an organization might go completely wrong, right? Tell us about some of the governance challenges charities face.
I think years ago, charities were faced with a problem that they weren't even aware of. There was a time when charities sought to what one would call a blue ribbon board that had corporate leaders from some of the largest businesses in the nation on the board of a nationally soliciting charity and other very well-known and prominent individuals. And that was sort of a trend. And I think organizations did that for two reasons. One, there was a hope that some of these companies, if they're on the board, would contribute large sums as well. And the other, I think, perceived influence was that when people see these names on the board, they'll be more trusting of the organization. Well, what happened was that these boards got to be too large in size and not very engaged in the oversight. And as a result, some well-known organizations got involved in scandals. And it really happened to some extent because the board was asleep at the wheel and they really weren't doing their job. And I think ever since then, organizations today are certainly trending to having much smaller and manageable boards that can get together and meet as frequently as they need to oversee the organization's activities. And they're not going with the celebrity names that may be difficult to get to attend meetings. So I think it was a hard lesson learned, but it was an important one. And I think most organizations have done a complete reversal of that old philosophy that used to be so prevalent among organizations. The second, I think, problem issue with governance that sort of goes hand in hand with the composition issue I just talked about is sometimes the CEO's power and influence in an organization goes unchecked. And what I mean by that is ultimately the CEO reports to the board. The board is in charge. And the CEO can't go by himself or herself to do whatever they want. They have to do it with the agreement and guidance of that board of directors. And sometimes certain organizations, unfortunately, have CEOs that are very passionate about their cause and may do things without the appropriate permissions and checkoffs that can end up later being an issue with the organization for one reason or another. And I think that has led also to other problems as well. But that's the other, you know, unsupervised problem that could occur within many charities. And it's unfortunate when it happens. On the other hand, I think when scandals like that occur, it's something that an organization can recover from. A CEO can be replaced, better governance policies can be implemented, and you know, other things can be done to help regain donor trust. Although that's not something that organization would want to do to have a problem before they improve things. But in some cases, that's where it comes to. And again, it's a hard lesson learned for those that make the mistake along that path.
Well, it certainly is. And we've seen our share of charity scandals, certainly over the years. Yet, I think you would also agree that the vast majority of charities don't devolve to the point of scandal, but there are other issues that need to be addressed in many organizations. And as you know, while the vast majority of charities are able to meet our standards, all 20 of them, we do find still that a percentage of them don't. Where are we now in terms of the percentage of groups that don't meet our standards lately?
Of the ones that provide information, about 70% meet and about 30% don't. And I just checked with some of our latest listings, and it ends up being at that percentage. From one year to the next, it may drop or go up 1% or two, but it's generally been that 70-30 split. So about, you know, a little less than one third do not meet one or more of the standards.
And we're also seeing some areas that seem to be a problem for charities unnecessarily too. I think you and I talked about the annual report being a challenge for organizations for some reason or another. I would love to figure out a way to help charities really understand what we mean so that they could beat that standard.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting. We were talking about that the annual report standard, oddly, is consistently one of the top five reasons that a charity doesn't meet our standards. And it's one of the simplest standards to meet, because all really we're looking for is a summary that says, this is our mission, this is what we've accomplished in the past year, here's a summary of our finances and our board roster. I mean, that's pretty much it. It doesn't have to be a 20-page glossy, you know, bound publication. It could be a simple page or two on the website. You're done. You know, this is our annual report. And a lot of organizations don't go to the trouble of doing it, unfortunately. And so they'd rather have donors go and try to search for these things and find them somewhere on their site or in other places. And I don't know why they're missing out on what I think is a great marketing opportunity, because that's what the annual report really is in the end. It's an opportunity to inspire people to what you've accomplished and to give more to some extent. So it's serving a dual purpose, both, you know, informing donors, their generosity and what it's done, but also perhaps giving encouragement to make continuing gifts to them. And again, I think some organizations think that annual reports are old school because they think of them only as these printed items that people use to put in envelopes and mail to donors, when in fact, really all we're talking about is providing easy access to basic facts about the organization in one place on your website.
While we're here talking about standards, I want to remind all of our listeners that you can find all 20 of our standards at give.org. I hope you'll go visit the website give.org and you can see all of these 20 standards that Bennett is talking about and also all of the evaluations of the charities that we do. So I hope that people will take advantage of that great service. Bennett, we also see that charities, that ones that don't meet, sometimes it's because of this standard we have for them assessing their effectiveness. And there are two standards that we have that relate to that. Why don't you talk about that a bit and your sense of why charities seem to be missing that particular standard or those particular standards?
Well, one standard calls for organizations to have a board policy that says, at a minimum, every 2 years, we will conduct some type of effectiveness assessment, or in other words, seeing how well we're doing in regards to our mission, and then make any recommendations as a result. And we focus on the board being the one to have this policy to do this. And the reason we see every 2 years is because this is something that we think organizations need to do periodically, not just a one and done. So a board policy would help encourage that to happen. And also there's turnover at CEOs and at board chairs. So having a policy would help lock in your organization's commitment to doing it. And the second or sister standard with that calls for the organization to have a written report that would be provided to the board of directors that would present this effectiveness assessment and then make recommendations in that report of what the organization might do in the future as a result. That's the standard that has asked them to actually do the report. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an expensive outside consulting study. It could be something internally produced by staff even that addresses that basic area and is provided to the board for consideration. For these two standards, again, the audience is really the board of directors. And we felt that it was important that the board be given this appropriate tool and information so they can make good decisions about the future of the organization. And we also wanted the report, this effectiveness assessment report or impact report, to be candid and honest and upfront with the board about their successes and failures. And we felt that if we require this to be a public document, it would end up potentially being sanitized and being all cheery and upbeat about the organization without, you know, informing the board about other things that they need to know that didn't work out so well. So that was sort of our philosophy going into it. As to why organizations sometimes are not meeting it, that's a hard question to answer. And I think my best guess is that those that have active and engaged boards along the lines we've talked about in this podcast are more likely to do the annual reports and these impact assessments on a routine basis because they're doing their job well. And those that are not engaged or not that active may put this on the back burner and not get them done. So I think this is an example where I think our recommended practices are suggesting things that we hope will strengthen the organization beyond just the issue of having a standard, but also something that can help them in providing improved direction or making corrections on direction if they've gone off track.
Well, I appreciate that too. And you mentioned this word impact, and I guess we talked about it a couple of days ago as well in a webinar that we had on a topic covering that. And what we obviously realize is that when it comes to impact, there are lots of perceptions about what it actually is. Some people believe it's simply making a donation. Some people think it's volunteering. Some people actually think you have to have an organization doing work over a long period that's assessed and measured. How do we deal with this confusion, Bennett, around what we really mean by impact? Some organizations will just say, I opened the door and I have impact. Others will say, you know, we've been in business for 20 years and we've helped hundreds of thousands of people. Well, you helped them do what? It doesn't mean that you helped them and you've gotten impact. So how should we be thinking about impact, both from a charity standpoint and from, I would say, a donor standpoint?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because I think there are so many perceived definitions of what impact really is. And I think for some, impact is simply measuring the outputs of an organization in terms of like how many meals do they serve, how many people are being helped, what are the numbers of what they do, and maybe even looking to what the cost is in providing every widget of activity that the organization engages in. I think to others, impact, it means much more than that. It's talking about outcomes. In other words, if the organization is feeding the hungry, maybe their overall mission is perhaps to reduce poverty in an area. Is it helping accomplish that goal? What are the trends showing in that community about how that issue is being addressed? And of course, those are difficult to quantify, but when considered, they sometimes can help a charity figure out how better maybe to address the issue they're trying to do something about. In other words, you're stopping and looking at, well, what is our influence on the issue that we're trying to help with? And that's not something that, unfortunately, organizations think about as often as they should, but it's an important question. And also, it's really a leadership question for the organization, which we think really takes best part at the board level. On the other hand, I think what the impact issue can do for the donor in terms of whatever outreach the organization wants to have on that subject is more of a better understanding of what the organization is trying to accomplish. When we're talking about impact, it really means more than just summarizing accomplishments in an annual report. It's something a little bit more. How well are we addressing the mission? And that's something you can communicate with donors about. I mean, there are various statistics as well as information and other things that you can share with them that can help them better understand the bigger picture that your organization is trying to address. And sometimes that's a big motivator for certain donors. In my personal view, I think some of the larger donors are more interested in that information than some of the smaller donors are. But it doesn't mean that's not valuable. It's just something that different types of contributors are going to have different perceived information needs to make a wise giving decision.
So in terms of accountability versus impact, how should people be thinking about the difference between the two? You and I have talked about how an organization might be achieving goals, but might not be so transparent and maybe challenging the public in terms of how it uses funds. Talk a little bit about the purpose of an assessment of an organization's trustworthiness versus something focused on impact.
I think when we're talking about verifying an organization's trustworthiness, or we have a tendency to say accountability, but looking at that issue, it's a broader question than just numbers. It's taking a snapshot of an organization on a particular day and saying, are they doing all the right things to meet what donors expect of them in terms of ethical behavior and practices? When you're looking at the question of impact, I don't think it's either accountability or impact. Impact is just something additional you could also consider. Because when you're looking at impact, you're trying to assess Well, how has that organization made much of a difference on the issue that it's seeking to address? What information shows us what that might be? And then, you know, providing some judgment on that. And I think that's valuable, but I don't think that replaces the full accountability picture. It's just part of it.
Yeah, that's really important because organizations are dealing with very tough issues. And their approaches may be in many ways unproven when they engage in them. They may be great ideas, but it doesn't mean that they're going to work in every case. But I suspect what we want are organizations that tell the truth about where they are. They put out so people can know up front what they're attempting to do. They're transparent in how they're spending their money. They have governing boards that really engage and all the other things that you talked about up front that go to trustworthiness. Because in the end, it may well be that what they're setting out to do may not be achieved. And we also, I think, want organizations to try things so that some of these problems that have been with us a long time, maybe we'll come up with some solutions. And the solutions to some of these things are not very obvious. So just like fighting any long-term disease, any disease that we've been fighting for many, many years, we haven't necessarily found a cure for that particular disease yet. But we continue to support organizations working on that because we believe, and they tell us, that they're going about it a certain way and they have a theory of how to solve the problem. And they're being transparent in how they're spending money and how they're being governed and so forth. And so I think it's really important for donors to understand that just because an organization hasn't achieved a goal may not be a reason to not support them.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and that reminds me, Art, of another thing that you and I have talked about, which is the difference between incremental change in terms of charities slowly making progress to a very important but hard issue. And such as the researching a disease cure, and the other issue of immediate change or radical change where organizations are doing something right now. And it might be, the best example is disaster relief, helping the people right now with emergency aid. So there are some organizations by their nature that are going to have immediate impact about what they're doing because of the type of problem they're addressing. And there are others where it's going to be incremental. And one of the dangers in solely focusing on impact is that I don't think it's a fair comparison between the two, because you're looking at fundamentally different structures and reasons that organizations exist. And it's not something that can easily be looked at and compared in that way. And so I think this is an especially important message, I think, for younger generations, where I sense there is, among some, a cultural frustration about wanting change and wanting it to happen in the here and now and not later. I think that's true about the environment and other very important and vital issues. And that's all well and good, but by the nature of what certain organizations do, some are going to be able to address that in that manner and others won't because of the nature of the efforts that they're engaged in.
It's very important. Anyway, Ben and I really appreciate all the work that you do. I've really enjoyed our partnership over these last 20 years or so. And I think, my friend, we've done a lot of good work in making this world a little bit better than it might have been had we not existed. And I think we've helped donors make some really good decisions, and we've certainly helped charities demonstrate their trustworthiness to the public.
Well, thank you, Art.
This is the Heart of Giving podcast powered by bbbgive.org. I'm Art Taylor. My guest has been Bennett Weiner, the Chief Operating Officer at the Wise Giving Alliance. I thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in to our next episode, which you can find on all major podcast platforms.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. Send your comments and ideas to Nona@thusmarket.com. That's Nona@thusmarket.com. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.